Hey guys, before we get started, I wanted to talk about a skincare line I've been using. We all know that lines and wrinkles are a normal part of aging, and as I'm moving toward my mid-40s, I'm trying to age as gracefully as possible, so I started to consider Botox. Not wanting to make that financial commitment, I started to look into alternative options and found Frowny's Facial Patches. I've been personally using Frowny's Facial Patches, their apple serum and under-eye gels for about a year. I wear the facial patches while I sleep. They hold your facial muscles in place and retrain them to lie in a smooth, flat position. I started wearing them 5 nights a week and have since transitioned to using them once or twice a week for maintenance. I've noticed a big reduction in my forehead lines, and I use their apple serum and under eye patches to target other facial lines. If you want to try them out, just use a link in our show notes and get 10% off, or just use our code CRIME10. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Crime and Coffee Couple. My name's Allison.
And my name is Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Al. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Hey, real good. How's your week been going here?
It's been typical, I'd say.
Oh, I want to say real quick, we are a weekly true crime podcast, in case you didn't know that already.
In case you didn't know it.
Yeah. Every single Sunday around 9 a.m. Eastern, we come out with a new episode. So, yeah, indeed. Go ahead and click that little plus button in the upper right-hand corner to add us, like subscribe to us or whatever. And haven't said this in a while, but if you've heard us like 3 times and you kind of like what you're hearing, then it's time to put out. I think kind of like when you're dating someone, it's like the third date. Okay, time to get down to business.
Or right? You would think it might be around that time because nobody should ever do anything they don't want to.
I mean, at that point, if you don't know, it's like, all right, well, maybe we should break up. You know, which is totally fine. Go find somebody else. That's no problem. A lot of fish in the sea. But it's time to go ahead and write a review if you'd like. So go ahead. We appreciate it very much.
Right? Exactly.
So anyways.
How was your week?
My week is fine. Totally fine. You know, I work from home, so I see this room that we're in right now a lot. So it's really nice for me to be back in here when I spend 40 hours a week in here. Every single day.
Well, that's why I had to put the skull wallpaper up, change it up. So maybe like every 6 months I'll redo it.
Yeah. And it's cool when I'm talking to clients and they're like, is that skull wallpaper you have up? And I'm like, well, yeah, actually it is. So if you don't order, then
it's unexpected.
Right. And which is cool. It's a talking point and that's fine. So that's good.
So we were talking about how we've just recently been watching some new shows. If you have Apple TV, my coworker has been suggesting all these great shows to me. And I finished Bad Sisters last week. Fantastic. So if you have it, I highly suggest that one. It takes place in Ireland, which I now want to go to desperately. And then we just finished Severance last night.
Oh, man. Severance is interesting. It's like one of those things. I don't know that I would recommend it to my friends. I give it like a 7 out of 10, I think. 7.5.
I gave it a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, which we always do that for everything. Movies, shows, whatever. Just to kind of gauge our interest. And it's definitely interesting. I'm happy that I watched it.
And what is it? 9-10 episodes. So it was quick. I do a lot of show watching while I'm on the treadmill or doing laundry or something like that. I always have my earbuds in. It really passes the time.
Number one, you should listen to true crime podcasts.
Of course. Right. That's first and foremost. If you finished our episode, then, you know, and you're looking to watch other things. But I highly suggest those two.
So the interesting thing, we watched that kind of together, sort of. It is kind of sci-fi, but there's relationships involved, which are really interesting. It's all about, like, should we even, like, introduce it at all?
No. If you're interested in seeing it, it's basically you have a separate mind for work and life.
Oh, so don't do it, but do it. Yeah, go ahead.
That's
you wanted
like
to be the one.
That's a very quick summation.
Okay, so you were like, no, stop, let's not do it, but here, I'm going to do it for
I'm
you.
I'm an asshole.
Yeah, sometimes.
So basically, when you're at work, you don't remember your home life at all. And when you're at home, you have no idea what you've done at work. So people who are at work don't know if they have a family. They don't know if they're married. They know nothing.
No.
So it's really interesting. I really enjoyed it. It's Adam Scott from Parks and Rec.
Yeah. Okay.
I really like him. Yeah. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for something to watch.
Oh, and didn't Ben Stiller direct a couple of the episodes?
Actually, a lot of them.
Yeah. I think he's like a producer and a director or something like that.
I love Ben Stiller.
Yeah, he's great. Anything he puts his name on, you're good. Besides that.
We're doing a Taylor Swift ice skate tonight.
That I am so excited about.
Yes.
Yeah. There's some local ice rink that's doing a Taylor Swift thing for like $19.97 because I guess that's an album that she has. I don't know. And I apologize for any Swifties out there. But
our daughter is obsessed.
Yeah. She's definitely. I asked her, are you a Swiftie? She's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so we're going to go do that with her and her friends and some other friends.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get into the podcast, I do want to mention, you know, every once in a while we have an Allison's Amazon addiction because I almost put it on Instagram the other day. There was like 3 different packages that came for you. And you always have something. You're always like, well, you know, I did have to refill my some pills or something, because you take like pills all day, every day.
They're vitamins.
Vitamins. Yes. Let's call them vitamins, air quotes. And there was something that came recently that I thought would be fun to talk about. So they are dermaplanes, dermaplaning.
Yes. So you know how, ladies, you get that like peach fuzz on the side of your face?
And I will say, as a man, I notice this on women right around age 35-ish.
Yeah. The hormones go a certain haywire way.
You're getting more testosterone. Testosterone,
there's
and less
just more
estrogen.
Hair and, yeah. and things, you know, out of your nose, whatever. Anyway, but on the cheeks and whatever side of your face, you will see it in certain lighting. So this, you like rub it down your face and this peach fuzz just flies.
Yeah.
It's very satisfying.
And it's like so new aged. It's almost like this thing called shaving, like, you know, but they call it dermaplaning.
We don't want to say we're shaving our face.
Right. Nobody wants to say
I don't shave my face. I dermaplane it.
Right, right. So it's a lot more socially acceptable if you're dermaplaning.
Yeah.
Either way, hey, you know what? Some women have some like hair in their face, and that's okay.
I have very fair hair. Like on my arms, you wouldn't even know I have hair. But you know how if the light's shining a certain way, you could see it.
Well,
so maybe
fuzz.
Like once every month or two, I have to do it. And it's a 6-pack of these dermaplane tools for like $550.
Yeah, we're not making a ton on these links. So yeah. It's just something interesting to you if
but
you want to check it out.
If the light's shining just so and you see it, I would suggest this.
Yeah, go for it. So yeah, anything else you got, Dad?
No.
Okay.
I'm plumb out of ideas.
Let's dig in.
I'm ready to go.
Great.
So this is a case I've never heard of. This is the murder of Meredith Chapman. So the story actually begins in the summer of 1986 when two teenagers met. So they met in Fort Wayne, Indiana. So this is Mark Garrido, and he noticed Janair Cox. She had beautiful blue eyes and a big smile, and he said that she simply just took his breath away. He was immediately smitten. Mark was extremely shy at the time, so the relationship didn't officially begin for another 4 years when they bumped into each other again. Mark learned that Janair was working at a nearby mall. He began coming to that mall quite often just to see her, but it was actually her who had made the first move and asked him if he was ever going to take her out. So she pushed that along.
How old are they at this point?
So I'll tell you when they get married. So okay. They were only teenagers when they met.
Got it.
So Mark was drawn to Janair's direct and confident personality, which was a complete opposite of his own. And they always say, you know, two
opposites
different. Yeah, exactly.
It's probably the better way to say that. You know, whatever you were about to say.
You summed it up much more thoroughly than I did.
It's similar to us. Like, you're all go, 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 process based, everything. I'm more kind of like happy go lucky. And I'm kind of like, all right, yeah, we'll figure this out. You're like, no, we need to have a plan for this going forward.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm an asshole and Mike's not. And that's how we differ.
I didn't want to say it.
So a few years later, the couple got married. It was October 23rd, 1993. Mark was 25 and Janair was 23. It was the day they truly believed that they had found the person they were going to grow old with. They were going to spend the rest of their lives together. And that's what we go into a marriage hoping for.
Of course.
So the relationship remained strong and steady until they faced a financial hit, as many did in 2008, when the financial crisis struck. Mark would later say that this changed everything for us. Because of the struggles, money was really their main source of stress. It was the cause of the bulk of their arguments.
And a lot of times it is. That. What is that saying? Like, if you have enough money, you never fight about it. If you don't have enough, that's all you fight about.
Exactly. So Mark indicated that arguments with his wife could be epic and that she always won because she was going to have that last word. So in November of 2011, the couple moved to Greenville, South Carolina, where they each found new jobs in marketing. Mark felt that their marriage was renewed and they connected over the state's scenic mountains and beaches. They were hiking, they were exploring together. And at this point, Mark said that he and Janair were closer than they ever were. It's like you and I went out on a walk this morning for like an hour and a half and we talk and we drink our coffee and it's like our date night.
And heavy petting.
We were on the trail and we were just heavy petting.
Yeah, you know, just petting each other heavily.
Like he was rubbing my back.
Yeah.
That's our idea of heavy petting.
And it was sweaty and I took my hand off.
And he was
gross.
Like, ew, you're disgusting.
Yeah. Anyways.
So this was bringing them closer together. So all was well. They chugged along. 6 years had passed. And then it was 2017 and Janair lost her job. This really knocked her self-confidence. She was having a hard time finding a new one. So her confidence was suffering and Janair was becoming a shadow of the person that she used to be. Because as we said in the beginning, Janair was somebody that Mark was really drawn to because of her strong personality and confidence. And, you know, it was sliding.
Confidence is so huge in a relationship. You know, I, as a guy who's probably like a 5 out of 10 on the look scale, having confidence and being funny are like two things that can get you in front of girls or guys or whatever you're into, just, you know, way easier and faster. People just like this air of confidence and humor that, mm-hmm. you know, the more confident you are, usually the funnier you are.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just one of those things. And when you get with somebody because they're confident, because they're outgoing, and then all of a sudden they're not, you can start questioning things.
And obviously when you marry somebody, you know, there's going to be peaks and valleys, and you hopefully will survive those valleys because people struggle, and you have to hopefully help bring up their confidence and bring them through it.
Right.
So they were struggling at this point, and they decided to figure out a way to just kind of turn over a new leaf. They decided they wanted to have a fresh start somewhere else. They chose Delaware as their new home. So after making this decision, Mark began to job hunt. He noticed that the University of Delaware was hiring a creative director for its marketing department. If he was successful, he would ultimately end up being supervisor. So Mark applied for the job. He sent an email. He received a quick response back. Mark was contacted by a then 32-year-old Meredith Chapman, who was 15 years his junior, and if he was hired, this would be his boss. So Meredith was born Meredith Sullivan on January 31st, 1985. Despite her young age at this point, she was exceptionally successful. I was reading all of her accomplishments and truly felt pretty low about myself. I'm like, I've done nothing. I have literally done nothing in life. This girl was something else. So at this point in time, she was working as a senior director for marketing at the University of Delaware. She grew up in Pennsylvania. She graduated from the University of Delaware with her bachelor's degree in communication. Then she went on to do her master's degree in education. She was also a cheerleader at the university. She later coached cheerleading at various high schools, Newark High School, Avon Grove High School. She was also a cheerleading coach for the Middleton Nitros. She started her career as a reporter. She produced for WHYY-TV, and in between, she spent 2 years as a communication manager for the then U.S. Representative Mike Castle. He later said that Meredith was really one of the major reasons why he was elected. He said that she was so full of fresh ideas. She loved her state of Delaware that she was living in at the time. In 2010, Meredith started her dream job as senior news editor at UD. She worked her way up to senior director for marketing. This is where she was in the position when Mark was applying for the job. So at this point, she was overseeing more than 20 employees. She led the university's advertising and social media brand. Excuse me. So Meredith was married to Luke. He was a former Newark City Councilman. The couple got married in 2009. They lived in Fairfield Crest with their dog, Indy, and in the midst of working for UD, Meredith ran for state senate in Delaware in 2016. When she lost the election, she just used it as a teaching point. So everyone that knew her said she accepted her loss with grace, and she reflected back on the importance of taking risks and pursuing our passions, no matter what the odds. So those that knew Meredith described her as someone with boundless energy and motivation. She's the type of person who was coming back from a 5-mile run as everyone else in the house is just starting to wake up. Someone who could accomplish more in one day than most could in a week.
It does sound like you, just so you know.
Well, I mean, maybe so, but I can definitely accomplish a lot when I set my mind to it, but this girl really hit the pavement running.
Yeah,
I mean,
for sure.
It was impressive. So when she believed in something, she was all in. So Meredith invited Mark in for an interview. During their conversation, Mark was immediately captivated by not only her beauty, but also her brilliance. He said, "When I sat across the desk from her, within 5 minutes, I didn't say it out loud, but he thought in his head, I have got to work for this person." He was dumbfounded by how articulate, energetic, and passionate she was about her job and how accomplished she was at such a young age. So Meredith must have been equally as impressed with Mark because she quickly offered him a job and he accepted. So in November of 2017, Mark relocated to Wilmington, Delaware. In the meantime, Janaire stayed back in South Carolina to tie up loose ends. That's kind of how we were when we moved from Illinois to Florida. You came months after me because you were selling our townhouse and all that good stuff.
And I moved the whole entire house by myself with a couple friends. And most of the stuff that I put into the truck got destroyed. So
it was a disaster.
I think even a couch we still have here today has a big hole in it. But we have it against a wall so you can't see it.
So again, Mike packed up the truck. So the day it arrived in Florida, I literally
cried.
I cried hysterically. Everything we owned was damaged.
Hey, just like Meredith said, you only learn from mistakes, right? You learn from your failures.
Everything.
And now we're good.
Tables scratched to high holy house. All of our couches were ragged.
Okay, let's get back, please.
Nightmare. So if you have a husband, don't let him pack up your house for you while states away.
If you have Mike Pernecki, don't let him pack for you.
If you have Mike Pernecki.
Other husbands, I'm sure, could do it fine.
So Janaire is staying in South Carolina, and she was, you know, trying to get their house rented or something like that. She's tying up all the loose ends. So in the meantime, now he's in Delaware without her. He is focusing on his career. He's spending a lot of time with Meredith.
Sure.
We all know where this is kind of going.
Yep.
So he was able to really get to know Meredith, and despite their 15-year age difference, they seemed to have a lot in common. One day, she asked Mark out for a drink. So they sat and had a drink, and Mark found out that Meredith was just so easy to talk to. He spoke with her about all different things, about how he lost his parents as well as one of his brothers. He also discussed his marriage to Janaire. He wasn't saying anything really negative at this point. They were just talking. Not long after, Mark and Meredith met for dinner. This seemed more like a date.
Yeah, the drinks thing, you can say, you know, like a work drink after work.
Yeah.
But this is like, we're going to go out together.
This felt more real. So during their dinner together, Mark opened up to Meredith about the issues within his marriage. Mm-hmm. So he later said that issues with Janaire really came into focus while he was spending time with Meredith. And I will always say that the grass is going to be greener on the other side of the fence. And when you get over that fence and really settle in and plant your roots, the grass will also show the brown spots.
Lots of piss stains.
Lots of piss stains start coming
either
up.
Side. Yeah.
Anytime you get through that honeymoon phase with somebody, you start to see the toothpaste on the bathroom counter and they didn't wipe that or whatever. So it always kind of pisses me off when I hear like, oh, my wife, she's such a freaking, I'm sorry, pardon my French, I get worked up, a nag, and this person's not. It's like, because you don't know them yet.
Right.
So that bugs me. So, you know, he's seeing all the good things about Meredith, which is focusing on the not so good things that he's seeing within his wife. So Meredith is frequently paying him compliments, telling him how good he was at his job, what a wonderful man he was. He felt that he had not heard such words come from his wife's mouth. He was happy with the attention that he was receiving. That just made an impression on me, he said. Here's a woman that I think is amazing, and she's saying that she thinks I'm a wonderful man.
And one thing I do want to point out is there's different love languages for everyone. We've brought this up before, but you probably haven't listened to every single episode. Definitely find out what your love language is along mm-hmm. with what your, I know it sounds fooey and granola-y, but it's 100%.
Corny.
Yeah, but it's 100% useful because your love language are acts of service.
Yes.
So if I do things around the house and then, you know, you'll notice that, and that's the way of me telling you I love you. Mm-hmm. Whereas for me, mine's are words of affirmation. Mm-hmm. So if you're telling me you're proud of me or I'm doing a good job working hard, like you said something nice this week and that really meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's different things like this guy's, you know, one of his love languages is words of affirmation, obviously.
For
and
sure.
He's getting it from this person right
yes.
now.
Yes. And it's not only important to know your love languages, but communicate that with your partner because then they can recognize, oh, you know what? I'm stuck in this rat race of life. I'm going through the motions. I'm not really giving them enough compliments. And sometimes I have to do that myself. I'm like, shoot, I haven't paid Mike a compliment.
Because that's not your love language. I tell you stuff all the time, but it kind of falls on deaf ears. No, you probably appreciate it, but not as much as I would if I got told the same mm-hmm. thing. So that's where, like, you know, I know, like, I don't care if you do anything for me as long as you tell me I'm doing a good job.
Right.
You know, give me an attaboy. Whereas, yeah, that's why you probably don't say it as much because it's more about what you do. Like, you do tons of stuff for me, but I might not notice it because I don't care, you know?
Yeah. So words are weak to me.
Right.
Yeah. Show me how you love me. Don't tell me how you love me.
Tell me, don't show me. And then we'll put a link to love language.
It is interesting. And it's kind of fun to do. It's a talking point between you and your partner, and you guys can see how different you are. And it's one of those things like, huh, that's interesting. Okay. You know, clock it away and use it for...
I didn't even know words were important to me until I did this.
Yeah, so it's cool. So 4 weeks after Mark and Meredith met, they shared their first kiss. So
that's having that first kiss is like, you know, you can't compare that to kissing your own wife or husband. You know, there's always those butterflies and it's just like, oh my God, are we really doing this? You're getting away with it. Mm-hmm. Not that I've ever done it, but I mean, you know.
But again, we go back to the thing that anytime something is new, you have the sparks, you have the butterflies. To me, there's nothing like a long-term relationship when you know, like you're all in. I gave birth in front of you. You saw everything.
I've seen you dermaplane your face.
You saw the hair flying from the cheeks of my face. It's one of those things. I'm way more into that. Don't get me wrong. Excitement is really cool. And I read books or like watch, what was that? 50 Shades of Grey. It's like, ooh, you know, whatever. That's exciting. Mm-hmm. But I would much rather come back to where my back is. You know, you've got my back.
Supported. Yeah.
Exactly. So obviously this is exciting for them. So as excited as Mark was, he also felt immediately awful for betraying his wife. He claims to have told Meredith that whatever was about to happen, it couldn't, because he cared too much for his wife. At the same time, he was unable to deny the feelings that he was having for Meredith, who also had opened up and said that of the 9 years she had been married, the last three had basically just been a show. So despite what Mark said about caring about his wife, he wanted to find out what it was that was drawing him to Meredith. He said that he felt confused by these new and unexpected feelings and had also become like addicted to these feelings. So he said that meeting Meredith made him realize that life could be different. And he admitted that he had been married to Janair about 24 years at this point. They were going through the motions. And you do get locked into that day to day, doing the same thing. And he was worried that the next 24 years of his life were going to be equally as mundane, basically.
It's up to you, buddy. You can make it a little bit more spicy if you want to go take some dance classes or whatever. Just bring some stuff up. It's not going to magically take care of itself.
Nope, 100%. So before Janair was able to make her move from South Carolina to Delaware, Mark and Meredith had already told each other that they love each other.
Wow, that sucks.
So very quickly. So around this time, Mark had also been offered a job in Colorado. He did fly to Denver just to kind of check it out, have an interview. During the interview, he felt something click that made him realize that he did not want the job. He wanted to see through what had started between him and Meredith.
Meanwhile, still being with Janair.
Yes. And okay. Janair is now relocating from South Carolina to Delaware. She doesn't have a job.
Yeah.
She's making this life change, you know, for them as a couple. So, yeah. So from the airport in Denver, he texted Meredith, "I am all in." At this point in time, Mark was 49 years old and he had been married for 24 years. Mm-hmm. So 47-year-old Janair moved in December of 2017, just before the new year of 2018. It did not take her long, as most women can say, you pick up senses. Trust your gut, they always say. So she sensed that something just didn't feel right with Mark. She's feeling a sense of distance from him. So soon she did confront him about her suspicions that he was involved in another woman. Mark is adamantly denying this. So at this point in time, Janair is now specifically asking, are you having an affair with Meredith? So she said her name. She had noticed, again, as a perceptive woman, that Mark had mentioned her name multiple times, and yes, only in the professional way. But women pick up on the fact that their husbands are specifically name-dropping a particular person.
Well, you can tell that person's on his mind all the time.
And if you see a picture of Meredith, she's very cute. Mm-hmm. So right away, Janair had suspicions, and she was right. But in the meantime, Mark is continuing to deny these accusations, but Janair remains steadfast. So her suspicions are raised, and Janair began to keep a close eye on Mark, and it did not take long for Mark to start to notice that his wife had a lot of information, and this information was things that she would have no way of knowing about him and Meredith.
So she got into his stuff.
So obviously Mark is very suspicious as well. So it was around Valentine's Day of 2018, and Janair eventually admitted that she had hired a company that allowed her to gain access to his phone to view a record of calls he'd exchanged and basically clone his device is what she did. So realizing that he was caught, he can no longer deny it's in black and white.
Yeah, I mean, you can be pissed off about that, but in the meantime, you are caught.
Right. So he finally did admit it, and he also admitted that he had fallen in love with Meredith, and I'm sure it was clear to see on the device that they were exchanging I love yous.
Yeah, there's probably I love yous, plenty of pictures of different things, interactions of maybe descriptions, and a lot of stuff she didn't want to see.
So Janair was obviously devastated by this admission. She did remain confident that they could work things out. She immediately asked Mark if he would please attend marriage counseling, and he agreed. On the day of their second session, Mark put his jacket on, and he felt something in the lining. He initially thought there was still an anti-theft device on his jacket, so he looked further. And on closer inspection, he actually had to cut the lining of his jacket open to see what it was, and there he found a recording device. So Mark was furious, so he confronted Janair, who simply explained that she just wanted to know the extent of his relationship with Meredith and wanted to overhear any potential future plans that they were making.
Oof. Yeah, probably not a good move. I mean, you can't. I don't know what I would do in that situation, but
I can't say. She also said that she had spoken to the university as well as Meredith's husband about their affair. At this point, what was left of his relationship with Janair quickly dissolved and crumbled, and he eventually told her that he would be filing for divorce in May when he met Delaware's residency requirements and could move out of their shared home. In the meantime, Meredith's professional career was quickly accelerating, and she was actually offered a new position as assistant vice president for marketing and creative services at Villanova University in her home state of Pennsylvania. So during this time, she was also in the process of divorcing her husband in order to pursue a new relationship with Mark. She was relocating to Radnor Township, Pennsylvania. In the meantime, Mark had also left his job at UD in early April of 2018 and began looking for a new place to live. So they're basically taking the steps to become a couple themselves together. So as Mark and Meredith's relationship continued to grow, Janair began to meet with a divorce coach named Sheila Brennan, where she spoke about the anger and resentment that she held from being basically tossed away and traded in for a younger woman. Sheila indicated that her client had also fear of being left financially drained since Janair had found a new job since she had not found a new job since relocating to Delaware. She was basically, she'd been out of work for about a year at this point. So she is scared. You know, not only is she losing the person that she assumed would be the love of her life forever, but she's also like, crap, I don't have a job. What am I going to do? That had to have been terrifying.
Absolutely.
So the stress began to take a toll on Janair's mental health, and she began to act erratically. At one point, Mark claimed that she even threatened to jump out of a window. Mark encouraged Janair to seek a psychiatrist's help as well as support from family and friends, and she did. And as she took this advice, she seemed to become more accepting of their impending divorce. It was Mark's belief and impression at this point in time that she was acting herself. She was starting to begin to, you know, be her typical self.
Go to the next stage of whatever grief it is, or
So in the weeks before Mark planned to move out, Janair brought him a list of requests, and Mark felt that he had gotten through the worst of what they were going to go through and that Janair was coping better with the situation. So on Janair's list, she requested that they do things together. She wanted to go on hikes. She wanted to have dinner. She generally just wanted to spend more time together before he moved out.
With Mark?
With Mark.
I mean, this is over, so that's probably not going to be good. I imagine Janair wants to try to work to get things back together, but hopefully he didn't do it. Maybe he did because he wanted to just kind of keep some stuff together before he moved out finally.
So really what happened was that Mark was deciding to appease Janair and keep the peace. And in the meantime, she was desperately clinging to the hope that he would take her back.
Of course, that's the only reason. And at the same time, he's trying to play a game and he probably likes to be, you know, wanted by her still and just wants to like kind of hold it over her.
Maybe. So Mark said, "It was odd, but I'm trying to land this thing so that she's in a good place. If this is what she needed, then I was going to do that." So as they spent time together, Mark believed that he was helping Janair to gain closure of the relationship.
Ugh, you're not. I mean, it's kind of easy to see.
It's just kind of stringing her along. It's confusing.
I mean, if think of you would literally talk to anybody else, they'd be like, probably not a good idea, buddy. But hey, hindsight's 20/20.
So Janair began posting on the Nextdoor app asking for recommendations, and what she had written was an excellent, in all caps, marriage counselor for a couple that's on the brink of divorce. She went on to write, "We will need someone who is very educated and experienced dealing with couples' issues, including infidelity, depression, traumatic experiences, child-parent dynamics, being accountable for actions, etc."
I'd read that on Nextdoor and be like, "Ooh, good luck with that one, sister."
Yeah.
I don't think this is going to help.
So on the night of Monday, April 23rd, 2018, Mark and Janair had made plans to meet for dinner as part of her request to spend more time together. So Mark is at the restaurant. He's waiting for Janair to arrive. And in a series of texts, she explained that she was running late. She had made a wrong turn. Eventually, she sent another message that indicated that he should just go home since she wasn't going to make it. Only minutes later, as Mark was preparing to leave, Janair sent another text with a picture of an empty trash bag with a condom in the middle, followed by another in which Janair said, "You ruined my life." At this point, it is dawning on Mark in horror that Janair was sifting through the trash can outside of the house that Meredith had only been living in for about a week because she was starting her new job at Villanova University. So Janair sent another two texts that said, "I hope you never find happiness," and "Bye, Mark." So Mark began to frantically call and text Meredith, fearing that his wife was capable, not knowing, I should say, what his wife was capable of. So all forms of communication that he was trying desperately to reach Meredith were going unanswered. So in the meantime, he is rushing out of this restaurant and heading to Meredith's house. So he's not sure what he's going to potentially walk up to. He's fearing that he's going to find the two in a confrontation, but he never imagined the horrors of what he would find. When he arrived to Meredith's house, he found her laying face down and lifeless on her kitchen floor. There was a pool of blood forming around her head. Nearby, he found his wife in a similar state, also laying on the kitchen floor.
What?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Less than 2 hours before she was murdered, Meredith had posted a beaming picture of herself on Instagram at Villanova University that read, "Couldn't be more excited to be a Villanova University's new assistant vice president for marketing and creative services. Just a week on the job and I'm already feeling the love."
That's absolutely horrible. And horrible. Obviously, this Janair, she's suffered from some mental things here. And oh, man, that's got to suck so bad being Mark and just knowing, obviously, you know, I feel bad for, you don't want anybody dead, okay?
No,
whatever Mark
not.
and Meredith did, sure, it's right, it's not right, but, you know, they didn't kill anybody. And really, this Janair, she had to feel some pretty, I mean, she had to have some mental instability to be capable of this.
And, you know, we would never sit here and say we agree with infidelity. I mean, we know it happens. What is it? 50% or more of marriages do end. Oftentimes it is because of infidelity. I can't imagine the anger and angst a person must be feeling to know that their partner in life betrayed them in such a way. I can't imagine. It's got to be awful. And I don't wish it on anybody. But the fact that it ended so tragically is just heartbreaking.
So he's standing there in the room or in the house or whatever, in the apartment, and just looking at them both dead.
Yes. Ugh. So when Mark arrived, one of Meredith's neighbors, this is Tim Mulvey, he was already there. Neighbors heard the commotion and the gunshots. Mark told Tim to call 911, and when Police Chief Christopher Flanagan arrived, he said that Mark was standing on the driveway and seemed to be hyperventilating.
Well, also, I mean, yes, this is a horrible situation to be in, but you know you're number one, suspect number one. As soon as the cops come, they're like, well, we're going to put you in cuffs, you know, just so you know. We're going to ask you some questions. We just got here, and both of the people that you're attached to are dead on the floor.
So at that point, he was placed in the back of an ambulance for evaluation before he was released into police custody. Not custody per se, but to the station, because he was a suspect. They wanted to question him. What was going on? What happened? So after questioning police, they found this Taurus Tracker 357 gun. I'm so bad when it comes to guns. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Okay. So they found this gun that had been used in both deaths. It was found under Janair's body, and two of its seven rounds were found missing. It was determined that she had broken into Meredith's home. She cleaned up the glass that she had broken to gain access to her house because she didn't want Meredith to see it and have her suspicions raised. She wanted her to just walk in the house with her guard down.
Sure.
And that's exactly what happened. So she basically laid in wait. And when Meredith walked through the door at about 7 p.m., Janair shot Meredith in the head and then turned the gun on herself, shooting herself in the head, and each died from a single gunshot wound.
What an absolute psycho. Like, can you imagine getting there and just waiting and waiting and waiting, and as soon as they walk in the door, you don't think otherwise, and are like, okay, maybe I shouldn't kill this person, but really, I mean, yeah, they're messing around with my husband, but it's more about your husband than... Yeah.
You're in this person's house that you don't know. You've never had a conversation with them. You're in their personal space just waiting. She might not know when Meredith is coming home that day. Who knows how long she had to wait? We'll find out more. But the point is, and like you just said, it's more of the husband that scorned you. Meredith does not know Janair.
That's where, you know, I don't get where husbands that come in and see their wife cheating, like, beat up the guy. It's like, I don't want you to beat up your wife either, but, I mean, your wife was the one that wanted to nail this guy. Not, you know, the guy is just, you know, trying to get something.
Right, and did Meredith know that Mark was married? Yes, of course.
Sure.
You know, we think about that whole, you know, Scandoval, or what do they call that?
Vanderpump.
And, you know, obviously people really went after Raquel or Rachel or whatever the hell you want to call her, because she was Ariana's best friend. You know, Meredith doesn't know Janair.
Sure.
Again, we're not saying that that makes it right, but obviously this is horrifically extreme. So
did you say how she found out where she lived? Are you going to get into that?
I think it was basically easy to find out because she was gaining access to her husband's phone.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So, but I'm going to tell you a lot of what they found. So police found a discarded bag at the scene that contained a wig and clothing that clearly did not belong to Meredith. A 911 call was placed just after 7 p.m. Police spoke with a neighbor who said they had noticed Janair drive up between 5 and 6 p.m. She walked toward the door with a bag over her shoulder. A few seconds later, the neighbor heard sharp noises from inside the house. I don't know if this was her breaking the window to gain access. I'm not entirely sure. So basically, what I'm saying is that Janair was at the house for about close to 2 hours, just waiting for Meredith to arrive, which is very eerie. So one day after the murder-suicide, police received a tip from a person who had seen a woman wearing a wig, a trench coat, a hat, and sunglasses that was clearly scoping out Meredith's house using binoculars.
I mean, this is like from a 1950s cartoon.
Like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, like, you know, like Pink Panther-esque or something.
Yeah, you get the trench coat, and you got like the fake wig, and it's like little nose and glasses, and it's like, hey, you can't tell who I am.
Yeah, so this, you know, the neighbor clearly saw her. They found, when I say they, police found a set of car keys at the scene of the crime, which they determined belonged to a Cadillac that Janair had rented. So as Mark was reeling from the grief over what had happened, he began digging through his wife's affairs and found that she was basically leading a double life. So after Valentine's Day, when Mark admitted, because she had his phone cloned, and he was caught.
Yeah.
She found black and white evidence that they were having an affair. So when he finally fessed up and, you know, confirmed the truth, this is kind of when it all started. So she basically started to open a secret bank account and credit cards so that he couldn't see what she was doing. He combed through her bank statements, her phone records, her computer. He found that she had purchased audio surveillance equipment, a lock picking kit, computer hacking software, and DNA testing kits for his clothing, as well as a high-end GPS tracking system. She attached this system to both his car and Meredith's. He named the device attached to Mark's car Mark Liar Jerk and the one attached to Meredith's M Whore. So he found more than 400 images of private conversations that he and Meredith had over text message as well as Snapchat. He found that Janair had gained access to his phone after the whole cloning situation had ended. So his only thing that he could think of is that while he was sleeping on the couch at their house, she must have taken his hand and, you know, done the fingerprint identification. So all of this is like dawning on him after this horrific tragedy. So 5 weeks before the murder-suicide, Janair had purchased a gun on March 20th, 2018, and credit card statements show that she had gone to a shooting range to practice firing it on three separate occasions. Mark couldn't wrap his head around the idea of his wife even doing this because they as a couple were considered themselves anti-gun. He said that he and Janair had spoken, they must have spoken on the phone, they talked about meeting to discuss things, specifically him and Meredith's relationship. As they had this conversation, it turned out that Janair was at the firing range. So he's like putting all the horrible pieces together of how this tragedy came to be. So the audio device he had previously found in his jacket was not, by all means, the only one that Janair had used.
I can imagine.
She had a bunch of them, and what she did was that she would plant it in the jacket, not knowing what he was going to grab that next day.
Just
so,
everywhere, every single thing he could possibly wear.
So he, with these devices, he found files that contained hundreds of hours of audio that his wife not only recorded, but she also transcribed into 12 notebooks.
Wow, she was spending every waking minute basically doing this.
Yes. Oh. This because she wasn't working at the time, this became her career.
Wow.
So she was recording conversations that he even had with Janair. So in one conversation, Janair could be heard telling Mark, "She is living my effing life." And in one conversation I heard, Janair was like, "I get it, you know," almost like insinuating he was going through a midlife crisis. "You know, you're bored with me. You're not attracted to me. You meet this younger girl and now all of a sudden she's, you know, stoking your fire." So obviously a lot of the conversations they had as a husband and wife were also recorded.
And she was trying to get him to admit to more stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you hear about people like, "Yeah, I'm going to bring this up to the court when we get divorced," and it's like, it doesn't matter. Like most states, it doesn't matter if they cheated.
Right.
It's just a matter of, you know, okay, now you're divorced and now it's 50-50.
Splitting of the assets.
Yeah.
So he discovered that she had cycled multiple listening devices in and out of the lining of his jacket. So what she would do was at the end of the day, after he had hung his coat, she would cut it out, take it, download it, and then put it back in and sew the lining back in place.
Well, I'm safe there because you don't sew at all.
I hate sewing. Yeah, who does that business?
Thank goodness. But she had to spend a lot of money on all these spying things.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, thousands probably.
Yeah, I wouldn't know how much it cost, but I would imagine, like you just said, it was expensive. So she would do this. This had been going on for weeks, you know, cutting
it out.
She's
addicted to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It became like you said, an addiction. So it also came to light that on the night that Janair murdered Meredith and killed herself, she had emailed a 15-page letter to her family members explaining herself, explaining everything that she was going to do.
Manifesto.
Yeah. She had started the letter weeks before she dated each entry. She wrote that she basically just did it for payback, and she wrote, "That's as simple as it gets." In the letter, she said that if Mark happened to walk into Meredith's house that night, she would kill him too. So she had accepted that he might go to Meredith's because they were clearly having dinner somewhat near to where Meredith lived. It looked like they lived only maybe 30 miles, I should say, from where Meredith had moved to Pennsylvania. Despite the fact that they're in Delaware and she's in Pennsylvania, it was about 30 miles. So Mark ended up going on to the Dr. Oz show in October of 2019, and he allowed a psychiatrist to read the letter that she had written. And this psychiatrist indicated that Janair had borderline personality disorder, which is a mental health disorder characterized by unstable moods, behaviors, and relationships. She explained that in order to diagnose this disorder, you have to meet 5 of 9 criteria, and what she could tell from the letter, all 9 criteria were met, which that classifies severe borderline personality disorder,
wow,
which she hadn't been diagnosed with, from my understanding of my research.
Well, you might just be like, okay, you know, getting hormonal or whatever it might be, and then just kind of chalk it up to that.
Mm-hmm. So Janair rented a car in Wilmington, Delaware on April 13th and drove to Meredith's house 30 miles away and parked on a side street. Mark was completely unaware that she had rented the car because, of course, she's taken out other credit cards and such. It was parked in their apartment complex parking lot. It was there, but he didn't recognize it. Sure. So why would he know? Mm-hmm. So afterwards, police found binoculars, ammunition, rubber gloves, and earplugs inside the rental car. There was a gas receipt that indicated that Janair had been in the area of Meredith's house since at least 2:40 p.m. on the day of the murder. So she had so many hours to think about it. And she went all in.
Yeah, there was no going back like, maybe I shouldn't murder someone and then kill myself. Mm-hmm. It was like, yep, this is what I'm doing today.
Yep. So looking back on what happened, Mark reflects that he wishes he would have handled the situation differently. Like you said earlier, hindsight is 20/20. He sees that he broke Janair's heart, and in her mind, she had no other choice but to do what she did. He says that despite his actions, he still loves Janair and wishes he could take it all back and change it.
Wow, that's let's stop on that for a second. So he says he still loves her.
Yeah, I guess. You know, they met when they were teenagers.
I mean, I guess he spent so much time, you know, he'll always love her, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, he just kind of fell out of love with her, but
I think really what happened was, you know, it's a lot easier to just, you know, go find the latest edition of your wife instead of putting in the hard work, because marriage is work. It's constant work.
Yeah.
Because you always have to, you know, maintain that relationship.
And reevaluate how things are going. Like, if it's like you're falling into a rut and it doesn't feel like as fun as it used to be, go ahead and change something.
And you know what? You and I have been together since we were 16. We've been together for 27 years. 27 years of hell.
Yeah, absolute hell.
But the point is you, what do you say? Every 10 years you...
I've read this somewhere. I don't know if it's true, but they say your personality completely changes. Like, you as a human change. You know, so whatever that may be, maybe you don't like completely do a 180. It's not like the exact opposite, but like if you look back 10 years ago, you're probably completely different. Like the things you're into, or like what you focus on, or like right. what you take more seriously.
And it could just be life experiences. We met when we were juniors in high school. We lived with our parents. We weren't grocery shopping and planning meals. We were just going to work at a bagel shop and coming home. Our responsibilities were far less than they are now.
I was making out with you and cutting my mouth on your braces.
Yes, that's yes. how far back we go. I shredded your lips on my braces.
And making out in the cooler of a bagel shop.
But obviously we've lived a lot of years and things have changed. We've moved states, we've moved houses, pets, had kids. Obviously we've had to grow together. That takes work. Sometimes it's easier to just go bone somebody else that's 15 years younger than you.
Yeah, that is actually the easy way out. And then you just keep on doing that until you get caught. And then it's like, mm-hmm. oh, well, you caught me. I guess I'll just go ahead and move on. That's what happened. A lot of guys do that, it seems.
So, you know, when Mark is saying that he wishes he could take it all back, I don't know if he means his relationship with Meredith per se, but maybe how it was all handled.
Yeah, and like, lucky for him, he's the only one that can talk about it now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all his story.
Right.
So he can say whatever he wants, whether he means it or not. And I hope he does.
But. Yeah. And he seemed genuine. Mark has since written a book about the incident called Irreparable, which discusses, you know, obviously what all happened, his relationship between both Janair and Meredith, as well as depression, PTSD, and mental health. He did get knocked when people heard about this because they're like, oh, you're going to ride that cash cow of this tragedy.
Well, I can't blame him. It is 100% a cash grab.
However, he maintains that any royalties from the book will be donated to a charitable organization that supports suicide prevention.
What about any cash advances from the book?
I don't know. So Dr. Robbie Ludwig, a psychotherapist who has studied homicide within marriages, read Janair's letter and believes that she may have been pushed to kill Meredith and herself because losing her life and like everything that she had put together in her mind of what she foresaw for her future was something she just couldn't tolerate.
In her mind, her life was pretty much over, so may as well kill herself.
You know,
not a good idea, by the way.
I mean, of course not.
You know, again, we've been through it before recently, unfortunately. And if you're thinking of taking your own life, that's not the way out.
Of course it's not. But, you know, she was privy to a lot more than many people are when they realize that, you know, they've been cheated on. she had all these recordings, hundreds and hundreds of hours of pure conversation between Mark and his mistress. So she was privy to their relationship. She heard it all.
And like one of the things I hear about all the time is when people are like, they catch somebody cheating and they're like, just tell me one thing. Did you blah, blah, blah on this date? And it's like, I wouldn't want to know that because then you'd have to picture them. Like, did you guys make love in our bed? And then they're like, yes. And it's like, now you got to picture that your whole life.
I would want to know every single detail.
Why?
Because I think the things I think in my head would be far worse than the actual truth. I would want to know it all.
Probably not.
And I would make you tell me.
If you caught me, it would probably be all true.
Yeah. So, you know, again, she heard all these recordings and this likely triggered, obviously, this triggered rage within her. And what she had done was clearly to make Mark suffer. And she did say that this was payback. She said that's why she did what she did. So Meredith's sudden and tragic death stunned those that knew her, both professionally and personally. I can't tell you how much I read online about people just raving over this girl. It was unbelievable.
I was just wondering, like, how are her friends and family? Because obviously this girl touched a lot of lives, very Tons. Successful, like helped a lot of people out, it seemed, you know, as far as professionally.
Professionally and personally. Like, sure. For instance, one person spoke out and said that after a long day of work, Meredith had driven an hour to go to her grandmother's viewing after her grandmother had passed away. That in itself was really touching for her friend. But they were talking about, oh gosh, we're all exhausted as a family. We don't want to go out to a restaurant. Meredith went with her husband, Luke. They got all sorts of food and brought it to this person's house, took her car keys so that she could have it all set up. The family all met there. She spoke with all the grieving family members until like midnight that night. That was the type of person that she was. She went above and way beyond what was ever expected of her.
Just a high achiever, very high IQ, like one of those people.
In like every aspect of her life. It's one of those like, okay, you have 24 hours in a day, as do I. What the hell am I doing wrong with my life? That's who I got from her. So all that spoke out about her life, described the 33-year-old, because at this point she was 33 years old when she passed away, in much the same way that she was just absolutely amazing. She was said to be a person who tried things. She invented solutions if they didn't exist. It wasn't like, oh well, moving on. No, it's like, no, we're going to make this happen. And she did. She made things happen. She did things that people did not expect of her, likely things that she didn't even have time to do, but she did them because she was a decent, vivacious, and creative soul whose death left a gaping hole in the lives of those that knew her. Those that did know Meredith said that she should not be defined by her tragic death, but instead be remembered as a person who fiercely loved her family, someone who was a compassionate friend and among the most talented and innovative professionals in the field.
Now, you said she was married, right?
She had been married for 9 years and had gone through a divorce.
Oh, okay. So she wasn't married at this point.
At this time, her divorce was final.
Got it.
So that is the terribly sad story of the murder of Meredith Chapman.
And the suicide of Jenner.
And the murder-suicide. Yeah. Suicide of Jenner. So it's just a terrible story. Nobody wins. And it's a touchy subject because infidelity can spark a lot of emotion.
And something I just thought about, if you're going to be like looking to date this guy, Mark, you're like going to Google his name and it's like, ooh, man, I don't know if I'm going to get into this whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to be attached to that for the rest of his life. And he's probably in his 50s now. Right?
Yeah. And he's very much, because in 2018, or he was 60s. 49.
Okay.
So no, he's in his low 50s. He's very much online. He's got his own website. And according to LinkedIn, he lives in like the Los Angeles area. So, you know, he's definitely, you know, still very much professionally centric in his mind.
In the meantime, you think like there's so many people that cheat on their wives or husbands every single day and they don't have to deal with what he's going through. You know, he loved both of them and that's okay to say, you know, and then he's got to live with us the rest of his life. So, you know, writing anything is going to get it off his chest. And,
yeah, he said his book was very cathartic for him.
Sure.
So, that was a tough one.
Okay. Well, thanks for telling Meredith's sad, sad story. Too bad. Another good one.
And really tragic on Jenner's end too. Yeah. Obviously she was dealing with a lot of, you know, mental problems that were going untreated.
Right. Well, hey, you know what? If you enjoyed what you're listening to today, there's a great way to support this little mom and pop podcast we got going on here. It's called Patreon. So go ahead and become a patron. It's as little as $5 to go ahead and get some bonus episodes. You get to, even if you want to do it for like a month, throw us $5. Hey, yeah, we'd appreciate it.
It's basically a way, if you appreciate the things that you hear, to support us.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how much we freaking appreciate it.
Yes, with all the emojis Allison sends me every time we get a new one. So I want to say thank you and welcome to the Crime and Coffee Couple Club to Kimberly, Jillian, Denise, Gail, Paige, Rainey, Katie, Elizabeth, Carrie, and Abigail. So
awesome.
Thank you all so, so much. We appreciate the HE double hockey sticks out of you. Okay. Ooh, sorry.
Mike.
I'm a little racy today. I'm feeling a little racy. So yes, thank you so much for everything. And anything else to add, sweetheart?
Nope. We'll be back next week. And until next time.